So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And there you have it in a nutshell. Welcome to the Ed Springsteen Show, folks, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. I tell you, you know, we have so many things that are going on, so many lies that are going on over the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman stories today. It is just incredulous to me, you know, how fraudulent the mainstream media has been in this whole situation, and how little everybody knows about facts or evidence, depending on what side of the coin you're on. You know, we have so many problems in this country, and so many things are ignored by leadership, by this administration, because everybody wants to keep us divided, and race is the easiest way to divide us. So we're going to spend some time on that tonight. We're going to talk about the realities of race relations and why we have racial problems. And there's a lot of people who are going to be offended because I happen to be a white guy, so I'm sure I'll be called a racist by the time I get off of this show. But I'm called a racist every day just by virtue of being white. So, you know, what's the difference? In the meantime, before we get there, I do want to start on a couple of local things that are going on right now. Just to give everybody quick updates, Metro Police Lieutenant Rich Pearson was in court this week. Rich Pearson has been told he's going to be terminated. He got a letter of termination from Chief Conrad. So he was in court this week. His attorney has asked that the judge give him an injunction to prevent his termination. Apparently, this follows a lawsuit that Rich Pearson and another officer by the name of Baron Morgan had filed against LMPD. They were the guys who had went out and contacted the Kentucky State Police through the Kentucky Innocence Project and got a woman that was put in jail for 10 years for murder or manslaughter. You know, she agreed to a plea deal based on, you know, pleading the fifth, basically. I mean, she took an Alford plea that said that, you know, there was probably enough evidence to convict her, but she wasn't admitting any guilt. Turns out she probably wasn't guilty. Another person, another guy had admitted to the killing when these two officers, Lieutenant Rich Pearson and Baron Morgan, found out. Baron Morgan worked for Pearson. Morgan contacted Kentucky Innocence Project. All indications are that he did not let his superior, Lieutenant Rich Pearson, know, which is what angered the hierarchy in the LMPD. And what is really fascinating with this story is there's not a lot of people who know the background of Rich Pearson or anything else. But Rich Pearson and Kenton Buckner, one of the assistant chiefs, him and Yvette Gentry, you know, these guys are basically sworn enemies. Kenton Buckner was so angry that the Kentucky Innocence Project had been contacted that he decided to call the Kentucky State Police himself and apologize to the Kentucky State Police for his officers interfering in this case. So that ought to tell you all you need to know about Kenton Buckner. We've been telling you for a long time, Buckner was nothing more than a Chief White flunky who got this job because he kissed Chief White's butt and did everything he was told to do. Kenton Buckner should not be an assistant chief, in my opinion, and many opinions of many officers that I've spoken with. You know, but he's going to sit there and chastise the officers and make apologies because his officers found out that there was a guilty verdict, that someone was in jail who was innocent, and they gave the information to clear that person, and Buckner thought something was wrong with that. That's disturbing. And, of course, Rich Pearson is no guy who's not known in Louisville either. You know, you get into Shawnee neighborhoods and things like that from many years ago, everybody knows who Rich Pearson was. This guy is known and has a reputation of being, shall we say, heavy-handed, excessive use of force kind of deal. He's also named in a couple of lawsuits that have been going on. He's named in Ferguson versus the City of Louisville in 2000, Commonwealth versus Neal. So there's a lot more to this story than what the mainstream media is reporting as well, and that's something that needs to be looked at. So we have to look at this kind of situation and understand, you know, there's more to this story. But why are they not telling us the whole truth and letting us know what's really going on? Who knows? Who knows? But it is disturbing. Another interesting story locally, where this defies logic to me. But apparently Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher is one of a number of city officials who are being called and asked to testify in Barbara Shanklin's removal hearing next week. It's scheduled to begin next week. You can look at the story at WFPL with our good friend Philip Bailey over there. But essentially, David Teschau, who's the prosecutor in this removal trial, says he don't even understand why Shanklin wants the mayor to be called as a witness other than to attempt to throw irrelevant issues into the case. He goes on to say that he's not aware of any personal knowledge that Fisher may have about this case at any level. Why he's being requested with Councilman Shanklin is beyond him. He thinks it's just a gimmick to try to throw some irrelevant stuff into the case. And, you know, the mayor, of course, hasn't stated whether he plans to testify or not. But this isn't the first time that Barbara Shanklin has went after Mayor Fisher in this case. It's really interesting because in February, Barbara Shanklin sued the mayor's office for public records regarding the prisoner program that's at the basis of all of this. She was alleging that Fisher violated state open records laws and deprived her of due process. You know, you've got to look at all of this stuff with a grain of salt, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, it's clear that Barbara Shanklin's attorney, Aubrey Williams, in my opinion, isn't fit to practice anything. I don't know who this guy is. It's strange to me. But I've never seen anything in this whole case that you could give him, meet him halfway on anything. And there's another point of contention here. Last night, they had the pretrial, if you will, for Barbara Shanklin. Aubrey Williams is there. Michael Connell, the county attorney, is there. And I'm no friend of Michael Connell, you all know. You know. But Aubrey Williams decided to turn this into an outrageous event. I actually had the audacity to tell Michael Connell, the county attorney at one point, to shut up and be quiet, accused him of playing all kinds of shenanigans. Connell, of course, you know, feigned, you know, he was all upset. How dare you? And told Williams his behavior was appalling. Well, Williams' behavior was appalling, but this is a show you got to put on for the media because he has no case. There's no way to get Barbara off of this. So it's alarming to me that they've gotten to this point acting like children, but what else can be done? You know, I mean, it's just the way that things get portrayed. In the meantime, the Bridges Project, we're still having some interesting situations come out of that. U.S. District Judge John Hayburn II ruled today that the states and the FHA, the Federal Highway Administration, basically did everything they could possibly do to look at any decisions that were made as far as the bridge's scope, design, and financing. You can read this in the Courier-Journal, but essentially what they did was tell River Fields, we're not going to listen to your suit, and they threw the suit out. The lawsuit was filed originally in 2009 by River Fields and the National Trust for Historic Preservation. The National Trust for Historic Preservation dismissed their portion of the lawsuit earlier this year. Presumably they were paid. I have no basis of fact to base that on. It's just my opinion. But apparently this thing went forward. The biggest question on this and the biggest issue for the lawsuit going forward was, you know, how discriminatory this was going to be against minorities. Because the tolling plan, according to CART, which is part of this, according to CART, the Coalition for the Advancement of Regional Transportation, they're still a plaintiff. But according to them, the tolling plan that was adopted was going to affect minorities disproportionately. So basically, they're saying that, you know, because it's going to have a disproportional effect on minorities, that this is going to be a problem, and they didn't address it. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, you know, we have got to go to the obvious here. We've got to get to some other things. And by the way, I do want to point out one other case. The guy that was involved in the, you guys remember the case out of Ohio. In Ohio, you know, you had three women that were kidnapped by Ariel Castro, kept in his place for years, and they finally got out months or so ago. The guy that claimed to have saved them, Charles Ramsey, basically went on record now saying that his life has been ruined. You can go to the Daily Mail and check that out. But he's roughly got $50,000 as a result of all this attention. But it's also important to understand that he said any reward money, because reward money was considerably more than that. I think it was up around $1 million or something. I can't remember. But anyway, he told the people with the reward money to give the reward money to the victims, which I thought was very exemplary of this gentleman. And he has gotten around $50,000 from private donations and things like that of people giving him money for, you know, thanking him for what he did. But he also says that, you know, since this has happened, he's lost his job and everything else. He's homeless. He's broke because no landlord wants the hassle of taking him in because people show up at their place. And when he works a job, he's used to working kitchen work. So he's not even in the front, you know, on a dining room floor. He's back in the kitchen working somewhere. But when he works a job, so many customers want to come in and shake his hand that it was disruptive to the business, so the businesses let him go as well. He can't keep a job because of the attention. So I think that is pretty clear, that sometimes fame isn't all it's cracked up to be. But here's the thing. Mr. Ramsey was an African-American gentleman. The victims included Hispanic women. Not white women. Let's not get this confused. Hispanic women. That's how they identify. So he did a great thing helping free three women. He said his only regret was 2 years prior when he saw the youngest child who was born out of a rape by Castro to one of the women was in the backyard playing. He just assumed that was Castro's granddaughter. Didn't really pay no attention to it. He wishes he would have acted 2 years sooner. Now, when you look at this, and here's the thing. We've got a black man doing a great thing to aid a non-black person. In this case, Hispanic. Not white, Hispanic. The reason this story is important to me, and it should be important to you, is because of where I've been wanting to go for quite some time. The issue of race. The issue of race. We continue to have so many misguided people arguing over the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman race that this was a race because a white man killed a black man, it defines logic. I listened to a show today, primarily African-American audience, primarily black audience, and in defense of a couple of the commenters, including the show host, they feel that the jury reached the right verdict. But the majority, this is just another example of how the white man can do anything in America and the black man is kept down. We even had some bragging about giving a donation to the New Black Panther Party, which is about the most racist organization, outwardly racist organization, I should say, going today. This should be an insult to everybody in America, white or black. As the argument progressed, there was a kind lady who had called in and basically said, hey, you know, we're spending all this effort talking about what happened in Florida to Trayvon Martin, but we've got all these murders going on right here in Louisville. When do we begin to address that? A perfectly logical question. I thought it was fantastic because I'm with this lady. But instead, it turned into George Zimmerman got away with murder. It was a known jury. He was not judged by his peers, so the case should have automatically been declared a mistrial, you know, because there were no black people on the jury, blah, 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 blah. We hear that crap continuously. But here's a couple of things nobody wanted to point out. One, there was a black juror considered for the jury who would have been on the jury if the prosecution would not have struck him as a juror. They struck this black juror because, under questioning as part of a potential jury, he was asked if he ever watched or listened to Fox News, and the answer was yes. So the prosecution, in their infinite wisdom, said, whoa, we've got a black juror, but he's not a hate-filled black juror. Because he listens to Fox News, we're going to assume that he's an ultra-right-wing Christian conservative who believes in the right to bear arms and stand your ground laws and shoot everybody. We can't have him on the jury. There's no way to get a hung jury or a mistrial. They made that assumption because of this guy, because he listened to Fox News. So was he profiled? Yep. Was he profiled because he was black? No, he wasn't. That is one issue. Another issue, as this lady was talking on this particular show, she was talking about how this jury was made up of six women. And three of the people who comment the most on this particular program said, no, it wasn't. It was not a jury of six women. They argued for a minute. Oh, well, I didn't know it was six women. But still, it was all white, so Zimmerman got away with murder because nobody cared. Because Zimmerman's white. So now you're arguing facts as you see them without knowing them. So you're making up arguments and dealing with emotion instead of facts and evidence. And that's always been the problem with this. This jury listened to the evidence that they were given, and there was a lot of evidence withheld. Last night we talked about part of it. The evidence of Trayvon Martin. What mood was Trayvon Martin in that night? What state of mind was he in? George Zimmerman should have never gotten out of his vehicle. That was his mistake and his first mistake, and it led to a tragic end. But George Zimmerman was not the one who swung at Trayvon Martin. According to expert forensic pathologists, and I'm not one, so all I can do is rely on the experts, just like I rely on a whole lot of things around this world that everybody else does. But he testified. Zimmerman was struck in the nose. It broke his nose. One of the arguments you hear, he just had a little cut on his nose. That's nothing. He was 50 pounds heavier. He could have beat him. That's a lie, just because he had a little cut on his nose. Bullshit. He could have fought. He had a cut on his nose and a broken nose. Zimmerman says as soon as he was hit, he went to the ground, and that's when Trayvon jumped on him. Now, I understand Trayvon's dead and can't discount that story. So what do you believe? What don't you believe? But the reality is this. Trayvon threw the first punch, and there was no doubt, according to expert forensic pathologist, not Ed Springsteen, not your mainstream news, experts who are renowned for their field of study and their work, have stated that the cuts on the back of George Zimmerman's head were consistent with him having his head pounded into the concrete, as he stated. That Trayvon Martin was bent over George Zimmerman. He was bent over George Zimmerman on top of him when George Zimmerman fired that weapon. I'm not justifying the killing of Trayvon Martin. I'm giving you the facts that the evidence supports. But try telling that to an angry black mob today. Try telling that to angry black people who continue falsely believing that George Zimmerman was white and not Hispanic, who continue falsely believing that George Zimmerman, because he followed Trayvon Martin and called it into police dispatch that he was targeting Trayvon, that George Zimmerman was a racist because he only went after Trayvon because he was black. That if it, one of the examples I heard today was, if it was a white skateboarder, George Zimmerman would have never worried about it. A white skateboarder, George Zimmerman would have never worried about it. We don't know that. And quite honestly, based on the number of phone calls that he has made when there's been suspicious activity in his neighborhood, I don't believe that. But see, that's my opinion. Because we have no facts or evidence to state whether that's right or wrong, whether he would have or he wouldn't have. The reality is that this was a political trial from the very beginning. That George Zimmerman is not the racist that mainstream media is feeding the black population. I mean, you think about this. We have people on both sides of the coin who listen to this show. We've got thousands of you guys who pay attention, and thousands of you will download the podcast of this as soon as I get it up tonight. Now, how many of you decide to come back after this show? I don't know. Let's see if I'm boycotted for telling you the truth. Because the reality is, most people don't want the truth. But the other reality is that back in 2010, there was a video that showed an incident where a drunk white guy who was the son of a Sanford police official co-cocked a black homeless man. I mean, co-cocked him. Came up behind him and laid him out with one punch. The guy went on to try to fight anybody he could. For no reason, he went up and attacked a homeless black man. The Sanford police didn't do anything about it. The NAACP, never stood up and did anything about it. They ignored it. This was a real, legitimate, we've got video copy evidence of a white police official's son shamelessly attacking a homeless black man for no reason whatsoever. They got swept under the rug by the Sanford police, and the NAACP doesn't do anything about it. The homeless black man's name was Sherman Ware. You may have heard about this. Probably not, because you don't want to pay attention to this story, because it doesn't fit with the preconceived notion that most of you guys want to have over the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin incident. Black or white. But while the NAACP ignored this, when it was a perfect opportunity to get involved and do something, they ignored this. When you have a legitimate white police official son shamelessly knocking out a homeless black man, Sherman Ware, because he could, but he's a punk-ass little bitch, I'll call it what it is, and the NAACP wimps out and refuses to do what they should be doing. You know who stood up to do something about that? Mainstream media didn't make this all over the national news. George Zimmerman and his wife. You heard me right. While the Sanford police were covering up this incident, the NAACP was ignoring this incident. George Zimmerman, the guy they're trying to say is a big bad racist today, and he targeted Trayvon Martin for being a black guy. George Zimmerman and his wife started a campaign called Justice for Sherman Ware. They started the Justice for Sherman Ware campaign. George Zimmerman was the one who organized the black community to get results and justice for Sherman Ware. He went to the black community and said, we need to stand up. I will stand with you. I will lead the way. But it was not right with a white man attacking a homeless black man. He did all the work. He got it all started, got the town enraged, got the town engaged. Even went on public record speaking badly about the Sanford Police Department and the police chief and this official and the way that his son was allowed to do this in a public setting. He put his name on the line and went against the Sanford Police Department. And mainstream media tells us, wow, George Zimmerman has a cozy relationship with the Sanford Police Department. That's why he didn't have to spend the night in jail. You have got to be kidding me, folks, if you believe that garbage. You have got to be kidding me. Nobody in their right mind believes that you're going to take on your local police department and embarrass them and hold them accountable to an illegal act, and that you're going to be their best buddy accordingly. We know better, or at least rational people do. But yet the media tells you Zimmerman has this cozy relationship with Sanford Police Department, that he's a racist who hates black people. He profiled Trayvon Martin because he was black, and he shot Trayvon Martin on purpose because he was black. None of it based in fact. None of it based in reality. And when faced with the reality that you even had a jury of six women, that should have been a prosecutor's dream. Six women, presumably most of which are mothers of children of their own, are going to reside over a are going to be the jury to reside over a case that involved killing a child. That's a prosecutor's dream, folks. But the evidence just was not there. Then you hear the arguments. I've done heard this argument today too. Well, the one juror went out and said and made her statement the other night. Now some of the other jurors are standing there saying she lied. No, that's not what they said at all. What they said was the statements that juror B37 made were her statements and reflected her attitude and her attitude alone. They're saying she's got responsibility for what she says, but she's not talking for me. Well, that's the same thing I tell everybody every day. I'll speak for myself, thank you. So everything gets twisted again. But when it came to a homeless black man getting beat named Sherman Ware by a white police official's son, and the NAACP hid, when George Zimmerman was in a fight for his life, and folks, don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself and try to justify anything here. When you're getting your head pounded into the daggone concrete, the back of your head pounded into the concrete, you can sit here and say it was just a fight. But the jurors believe George Zimmerman was the one screaming on the 911 calls. And he probably was. Sorry, I hate to be literal here. But the truth is, he's getting his head bashed into the concrete, as the expert forensic pathologists have testified, not Ed Springsteen. Sure, he was screaming. Do you think Trayvon Martin was going to stop? If he was going to stop, he would have stopped when he was screaming and yelling for help, right? But Trayvon's the one who initiated the aggression by hitting him. Zimmerman was wrong to leave the car. He created the opportunity. But Zimmerman has much right to be there as Trayvon did. I like that too. And I love the argument with stand your ground. Everybody said, well, stand your ground laws, that's the problem, blah, blah, blah. This wasn't stand your ground. There's a big difference between stand your ground and self-defense, folks. There's a big difference. But nobody wants to realize that because everybody wants to be polarized. Mainstream media wants the black community to believe that every white man is racist, and the black race baiters who don't have anything else to offer this damn world except hatred and everything else so that they can get paid for it, like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and about half the black preachers in Louisville who love to profit off of this bullshit argument. They get paid while you get played. That's the reality. The media wants everybody to think, the black man to think that whites are racist, and then the white guy gets to sit back every time you hear a two-second blip on news somewhere on a local channel, not national most of the time, but on a local channel, you might hear a two-second blip about, you know, 20 blacks just went into a Walmart or, you know, white girl bleed a lot, that kind of stuff. So the white man is supposed to believe that, oh, no. Oh, no. The white man is going to believe now that all black guys are criminals and thugs and slugs. We know that's not true either. But this is a clear division brought about by leadership, brought about by media who's complicit in this bullshit to make us all believe that we should hate each other. The black man as a race is not a criminal, thug, and slug. The white man as a race is not a racist who hates black people. Individuals and each race do. And those individuals should be held accountable for their actions. Not a whole race. But you need examples of how we are being manipulated by the mainstream media and the media at large. We'll get into that in just a minute. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break. And we're going to give you some of the stories and some of the things that are going on that you're not being told by mainstream media. And we want to know why you think that is. In the meantime, our good friend, Stop Invisible Taxes, Paul Holliger, is putting up a lot of great information in the chat room. You guys need to go in there and look at that if you can. We'll take phone calls when we get back, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Get over it.
Well, we are back, folks. Apologize for that split second delay. The studio was locked up for some reason. It's totally phenomenal to me just how out of hand stupidity gets. And we've spent the first half of the show talking about some of the dumb, mistaken stuff that's going on that's being perpetuated by people because they're either too lazy to get the truth, they don't want to hear the truth because it doesn't fit their preconceived outcome that they want, you know, or they just don't give a crap. Why? There's just no other way to explain it. Our good friend Paul Holliger over at Stop It put some information in the chat room for us, and I'm going to go ahead and let you know the makeup because, you know, like I said earlier, one of the biggest arguments was this jury was that, you know, it wasn't six women. Of course it was. But juror B29, let's give you a background on all of this. Juror B29 is a female nurse on an Alzheimer's ward, and she is identified as black or Hispanic, has several children, is married, and she actually lived in Chicago at the time of the shooting over a year ago, and she's moved to Florida. Now, Chicago, you would think she would know a little bit about shootings and stuff, right? Juror B76, a white, middle-aged woman, who said Zimmerman, mother of a 28-year-old son and a 26-year-old daughter, a white middle-aged woman is the mother of a 28-year-old son and a 26-year-old daughter. So she knows that a middle-aged white woman, B37, that's the one who spoke out, worked for a chiropractor for 16 years, and had a lot of pets. She also has two daughters, a 24-year-old dog groomer and a 27-year-old who attends the University of Central Florida. Juror B51, a retired white woman from Oviedo, who has a dog and a 20-year-old cat. She knew a good deal about the case, but she went on record saying she's not rigid in her thinking. Then you had a young white woman and mother who used to work in financial services. She actually used this case as an example to her two small children, telling them not to go out at night. How pathetic is that? And then you have another white woman in her 60s who lived in Iowa at the time of the shooting. She's got a 28-year-old son who's out of work. She's very well versed in cell phone technology and has been a victim of a crime. So, you know, apparently, like we've stated, most of these women were mothers. So they know what it would be like if they lost their child. That shouldn't be that hard to put together. It was a prosecutor's dream jury, with the exception that they had one black or Hispanic female on her, versus having a whole jury laced with blacks or African Americans. So, you know, but you've got all females. In the absence of getting black males on a jury, you want an all-female jury in the death of a child. I think any expert would tell you that. So thanks to our good friend Paul for getting us that information. But, you know, the real problem here wasn't the fact that George Zimmerman was found not guilty of second-degree murder and manslaughter because he should have been found not guilty. No, this is what happens. This case is a prime example of what happens when you let politics tell you when to try a case versus letting the evidence speak for itself. A second-degree murder charge should have never been attempted against George Zimmerman. There were no facts of this case in any way, shape, or form that could have justified a guilty verdict of second-degree murder. None. The prosecution knew that. That's why as soon as the trial was over, before the jury is set to deliberate, they petitioned the judge to let the jury go ahead and consider manslaughter. They didn't want the jury to talk about manslaughter until they realized they didn't and couldn't prove their case for second-degree murder. That's a done deal. Florida State Attorney General Angela Corey, she's the one who screwed this up. She listened to her political superiors tell her, the race baiters tell her, and public opinion tell her to lie and make up an indictment against George Zimmerman, which she did. That's proven she lied. She's facing lawsuits and all kinds of problems with that now, and she'll lose. She made up a fake indictment against George Zimmerman for second-degree murder because she wanted to make sure that the Democratic liberal politicians and the race baiters and haters could have their way. So she lied, manipulated, and everything else all the way through. There's no doubt about that. You need proof? Ben Krudbos, he was the former director of information technology under Angela Corey, was fired after he testified. Bruce Krudbos testified in a pre-hearing, in a pre-trial hearing, that prosecutors had withheld evidence. They did. They withheld evidence extracted from Trayvon Martin's cell phone. They withheld it from the defense. Evidence sharing laws say that you have to share evidence, that you have to give that evidence up. Trial law requires prosecutors to share evidence with defense attorneys, especially if it helps exonerate defendants. It's called the Brady disclosure. They're required to do this. There's no doubt about that. Even the Huffington Post, a liberal news organization, if you will, even the Huffington Post wrote a story about that. So we have to ask ourselves again, what's going on? What's going on is the politicians and all the race baiters decided to try to make this something that it wasn't. They decided to try to make this a white-on-black hate crime with no evidence whatsoever that that happened. And when they did that, they screwed up and they oversought charges. Speak of the devil, we've got Mr. Paul on the phone with us now. How are you, sir?
I am not the devil. I have answers that people may or may not like, but I am not working on behalf of the devil. If I were, I would not be a registered independent. I would be a member of the two parties.
So, I apologize for listening to the devil, but I was watching the new Black Panther party earlier, and all white people are devils, and I just happen to know you're white, so I apologize for putting you in that category. Go ahead, sir.
Gang, there, some of the information I put up in your chat room had to do with a couple of groups that basically have similar goals, and it would be really nice if they started working together so that each could achieve their goal, okay? One of them is the Black Separatist Movement, which is actually one of the most militant parts of that movement is, in fact, the new Black Panther Party, okay? They hate white people. They hate everything white culture has done to the black folks, and they want to go and do their own thing by themselves. And interestingly enough, there's a white separatist movement as well. And they apparently don't have a whole lot of use for black folks, and they want to go do their thing all by themselves. Well, if we have a black separatist movement and a white separatist movement, sounds like these two groups ought to get together and make separation possible, okay? So I've long been an advocate of our United States forming a new alliance. And so this black and white separatism actually could occur should this country form a new set of alliances, okay? Mm-hmm. We've seen the Soviet Union, which was a whole series of conquered and acquired countries, and they formed the Soviet Union under threat of military force. Well, when the Soviet Union's military ran out of money, the Soviet Union dissolved. It went away, and now most of those states that the Soviet Union controlled have gone back to their own autonomous region, okay? They're their own country once again. Now, what a lot of folks don't know, because it's not taught real well in public schools these days, is that the state of Texas was, in fact, a Republic of Texas and was its own country for a brief period of time, as was a couple of other states. Now, Ed, with all this dissension and hatred for the federal government as it's now put together, as it's now run, with the federal government trying to force all these different groups to do things because it can, and these groups don't want it, then, you know, maybe it's time for a realignment. Maybe we need to realign and form some of our own countries here on the North American continent and dissolve the United States as it's currently constructed. What's the point of having this population, more than 300, almost 400 million people on this continent? What's the point in keeping everybody all upset, trying to force things down one group's throat at the expense of the others? What's the point of that, Ed?
Well,
what's,
you know, the real
point?
Majority, the real majority in this country, though, Paul, don't fall into this garbage. Oh, I mean, the very smallest percentage of imbeciles fall into this racist garbage. They really do. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for a lot of states to secede from the union. Believe me, I would actually agree with that, but not based on race. Not based on race. You know what we need to do?
Well,
and this
point,
is the
point, though. That's my point. If the folks in Illinois and New York State and California, if they honestly believe that race in their states is a big deal, and they don't like what the federal government is doing about it, then why shouldn't they go ahead and say, we've had enough, we're out of here, we're going to do our own thing, our own way, and, you know, and the hell with the United States, because it's not meeting the needs of all the people in our state.
Because the government, the federal government has gotten too big and too powerful, and people are scared to take them on. I mean, that's the truth of it. That's exactly what we've done. We built this awesome military. We're taking every dime and keeping people poor. We're trying to take all the guns, all the ammunition, so you can't stand up. Because if you try to go down that road, you're going to get into a bloody fight. There's no doubt in my mind about that, and I don't think you would deny that either. And you're not going to have any state doing that, especially when the politicians – what people really don't understand is this is all political crap. The people on the street just want to live their life, go through their day, work every day for the most part, get their money, go home. You know, this is
the
politicians
doing
this.
All the more reason, Ed, for us to say we've had enough, let's realign. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, that New England wants to farm their own body, okay? Eight, 10 states up that way. They want to farm the country of New England. Okay, there's been talk out on the West Coast that part of California, like Oregon and Washington, they want to farm their own state. Okay, Colorado has been entertaining that. So a lot of this discussion that we're having right now, this isn't really news, but a lot of people in this country aren't aware of it. Because certainly the mainstream media does not do a very good job of reporting on things like this. Why?
Well, that's the whole
because
point.
It would jeopardize the income stream to the current crop of people who are running stuff. That's the problem.
Well, that's the whole point.
And actually,
it is always about the money. And that's something, too, because when you bring it all the way down to the money, which is all this ever is anyway, you know, it's interesting because you put another post in the chat room on secondary boycotts. You know, when you talk about this separation, you talk about all this other stuff, secondary boycotts is basically nothing more than somebody, I think they're calling for a boycott of Florida orange juice or something now. What's the boycott going to accomplish? Let's assume that everybody in America decided they were going to follow this secondary boycott and quit drinking Florida orange juice. Two things are going to happen if everybody in America actually fell into this garbage. One, Florida orange juice wouldn't be sold, but you're still going to get orange juice from somewhere, and those prices are going to skyrocket. You're going to pay three or four times as much for orange juice because Florida is probably, I don't know, I don't have the facts in front of me, but you always hear about Florida orange juice. I will assume that Florida is probably the number one state for producing orange juice in the U.S. So now you're gonna skyrocket prices for what's remaining of the orange juice because you're creating this shortage. And more importantly, how many jobs are going to be lost there? So now you're going to create more dependent people to go on welfare, and a majority of jobs like orange juice and things like that are farm jobs, and a majority of people that work those are Hispanic or Black African Americans. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. So now you're going to put all these people out of work, you know, the minority population out of work, and then it's the white man's fault again. Never before in our history have I seen a situation where a brown man killed a black man, and it was a white man's fault. And that's what we have with Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. Why is it so hard to make people understand that this is going on? We don't need to have every state be their own country. although I can see reasons for it, what we need to do is take our federal government back.
No. Well, first of all, we're not going to easily take the entire federal government back, A. B, I'm not advocating, and you have clearly misheard or misinterpreted what I said. 50 individual countries is definitely not what I would recommend. Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I think that the states that have common interests should consider realigning. Okay, let's say, for example, that the states of the upper Midwest, such say mm-hmm. that Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, Arkansas, Montana, Iowa, let's just say that they decided that they've got a lot more in common than not, and they said, we're done with this crappy U.S. government and the federalism that as it now exists. We're done. We're out of here. We're going to form our own country, you know, give it some kind of name, okay? And so they're out of here. Now, if we have constitutional guarantee, now one of the constitutional guarantees is the guarantee of association, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it seems to little old me, if we have the constitutional guarantee of association, then we should be able to realign. Seems to me. But what do I know?
Well,
right?
Okay. So, I mean, essentially what you're talking about is breaking up Mother United States like they broke up Mother Russia.
Not only Mother Russia, what about Czechoslovakia? Czechoslovakia is no more. It got broken into four different countries because
people relate more to the name Russia than they will Czechoslovakia. That's why you bring up Russia, because that's
wasn't Russia. Russia was actually one of the members of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Russia was one country
right.
out of a whole bunch. So now Russia is once again a standalone country. There is no more Soviet Union.
Okay.
There is no more Czechoslovakia. And there doesn't have to be a United States as it is currently configured. If we have the right of association, then we should be able to determine who we associate with, not have some damn bunch of political bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. dictate to us everything that we can and cannot do. If the minority communities around the country are dissatisfied with the way the government is treating their interests, they should have the right to say, see you later. Here in Louisville, we used to have a guy that was a really active kind of guy. His name was Reverend Lewis Coleman. It's like they named
mm-hmm.
a street after him shortly after his death.
Sure.
And one of the things that Reverend Coleman really wanted, and I'm not sure how bad he wanted it, but he certainly went through the initial motions, is that he wanted a city carved out of the predominantly minority parts of the current Louisville. He wanted to carve out his own city. Yeah, he wanted to carve that out. Part of the reason for that was because the city of Louisville, as it existed at that time, was not meeting the needs of the residents of Louisville's West End. And again,
well, as it exists even
in
today.
As a concept, that's exactly the way we're supposed to be able to do things in this country. But Reverend Coleman is as politically connected as he was. He ultimately dropped that effort because apparently behind the scenes a lot of political pressure was brought to bear on him, and he was basically told to back off.
Yeah, because it was going to cost him money. You know, that's another thing a lot of people don't understand about Coleman. Coleman was all about this flash crap, too. Coleman, to me, was nothing more than an Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson on a Louisville level. He always was. And I witnessed that firsthand right after the James Taylor shooting. You know, when Coleman had MLK III come in here and all the other stuff, he did his little march down on Jefferson Street. And as soon as they hit the park right across from the Justice Center, Lewis Coleman snuck out the back and walked away. As soon as they hit the park and Pete Seeger started singing Save the Whales, he snuck out the back way and didn't even stay for his own event. So, you know, I know about Coleman. That wasn't the first time I had witnessed this. But then you're going to get into the argument. And, you know what, I want to stay with this a minute. We might go into overdrive for a minute or two, Paul, because you bring up some interesting points. But when that happens, here's what's going to happen here. You take a situation like right here in Louisville. Let's stay with this one for a minute. You tell the West End, okay, today, You got what you wanted. You succeeded from Louisville. You're now your own separate city along, and you have all the responsibilities that go along with that. You're to govern yourselves. You're taking the poorest section of Louisville and telling them to build something that they have no money or any knowledge on how to do. Then what happens?
Ed, while I understand that you want this is as a debate point, wasn't what you described the basis, the foundation for this whole damn country? Who were the people that were being that were coming over from England? Were they the wealthy?
No.
Did John Smith and the Puritans, were they particularly well off? Hell no, they weren't particularly well off.
No, but they didn't have a building across the street. See, the problem is, for me, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, or I'm not interpreting 100%, and I apologize if I'm not. But the problem for me is this, because when you do that, you know, John Smith and them had an open frontier to really be start from scratch. But when you do that here, with the current mindset and the black community being force-fed for all of these years and generations, okay, that the white is bad, the white man is only out to hurt you, and it's the white man's fault for your plot in life, when you give them that responsibility and that authority, when you give this neighborhood that responsibility and that authority, and they don't have the tools or the finances to capitalize on that correctly to create the jobs, the economic opportunities, and everything else, you're going to see a depressed neighborhood get more depressed or get crazy, because as we know, when people are poor, that's when your crime and your violence shoots up even further. And they're going to look across the street and say, see, the white man left us in this mess and left us here. And you just created an even deeper divide. Am I wrong in thinking that way?
Yes, you are. I'm going to tell you, you're just flat wrong in thinking that way.
Because okay.
What you're doing is that you are discounting the human spirit. The human spirit's will to not only enjoy a good quality of life, but to survive. The pilgrims, when they came over, they had almost nothing. They brought with them a modest amount of supplies, and they had a dream. And they had what they thought would be sufficient supplies, but it turned out they didn't have anywhere close to what they needed. But
right.
You know, ultimately, Ed, within 2 years, that group of people dug deep in their personal psyche and found a way to make it work. And I have the same faith in any group of people that wants to create their own city, their own community, and, okay, you're going to cut the strings. And, yeah, initially, Ed, there may be some hard times, but that collective group of people will find it in their being a way to make it work if they want it bad enough. That's
the
key.
That's the thing.
They
because
gotta want it
I don't
bad.
Think, I don't
okay,
think
well now,
that today's world they have that mindset. Go ahead.
But right now, we don't even have that as an issue to worry about, because
right.
Nobody from Western Louisville has taken Reverend Lewis Coleman's idea about forming their own city. They abandoned that. They abandoned that. So it's obvious to me that that community-wide, that the mindset is they don't want to work that hard. And that will maybe go back to what you just said, is that there is a certain amount of being used to having certain things provided or certain conveniences available. Okay.
Well,
and so I just don't think that maybe every group is going to succeed. Have you ever heard of utopian sects? People, groups of people who decided that they were going to get away from the society of the day and form their own little utopia. Okay.
I have.
You ever heard of that? Okay,
yes.
There actually was a town, there is a town named Utopia over in southern Indiana, not too far from Louisville. Do you know that most, the overwhelming majority of those utopian sects, they failed in about a year. They all failed because they were going on the basis of an ideology instead of saying, what do we need to do to survive and thrive? They had a preconceived notion, kind of like Ed, the political ideologies that are both adversely affecting everybody in this country today. The Democrat ideology and the Republican ideology is killing this country, killing it.
Well, I agree with you. And it's the uniparty ideology, because it's not a Democrat or Republican thing anymore, because there's no distinction between them, as we mentioned on this show all the time. You know, these guys, the political leadership is only interested in maintaining leadership and maintaining their political base. They don't care about we the people anymore. They gave up on that many, many years ago. Go ahead.
So here's a question I want to pose to you and your listeners, okay, on this whole matter, okay? Why do we have, as a contemporary ideology or a contemporary belief system, that whatever group that we belong to, we should force our will upon all the other groups that exist in this country? Where did that come from, Ed? What gives us the right to take our group and say, we're going to force another group to do our bidding, to do our will, to steal their money in the form of taxes and redistribute it? Where in the hell did that come from? Because that wasn't what
you can start with the mindset country. All the way back to the Indians, but go ahead.
No, but this country was founded on individualism and a form of collectivism that was limited to working toward common goals, but yet maintaining the integrity and dignity of individual rights.
Well,
where
and
did
you know
that go?
Yeah, you know, when we first started as a country, Paul, and let's be honest here, and you know this history, but I mean, you know, when we first started as a country, you talked about how many people were starved and died off in the first couple of years. They, you know, they did that because they used that commune mentality. You know, it was that communist mentality. Everybody's going to work. Everybody's going to contribute. Everybody's going to provide for everybody else. So you had a guy that was required to grow trees, for example, and cut the trees down to make houses. You had another guy that was required to make bread, whatever. Okay, and they failed because what ultimately happened was human spirit took over. You have this guy who's working his butt off every day, providing for the whole community, but the guy next to him isn't doing his job and not providing enough bread because he doesn't feel like working. So you had more producing than the others were, and that's when you started getting into this whole individual responsibility thing, and that made us successful. But now we're right back to where we started at, I think, you know, in my opinion. We're right back to where we started at, where people now collectively want to take something for nothing, which is what they were doing back then. We haven't learned from history, and we're starting to repeat it, except it's on a much larger scale. Would you agree with that?
Well, I like your analogy, and let me just add to it by saying John Smith and his original band of utopians, or communists, if you will, who almost about half of which died in about the first year and a half, who bailed them out?
The Indians bailed them out. They taught them how to fish, and they taught them how to hunt.
Native Americans. Okay,
sure.
Now, what characteristics did the Native Americans have that the utopians didn't have? That's right, Ed. They understood their land. They had rugged individualism, and they took responsibility for each one of themselves as well as their community at large. But they didn't say, what you do is going to be redistributed. The Native Americans didn't do that. They had a great deal of amount of respect for the land. They had a great deal amount of respect for the tribe. They had a great deal amount of respect for their society. And they collectively, that's where their collectivism helped them. But they didn't engage in utopianism. That's it.
Difference.
But
you used one word we don't have anymore, and that's respect. Go ahead.
But, yeah, so it took non-utopians, or we're going to call them today. Today's utopians have a different name. They're called liberals or progressives. Take your pick. They're both equally offensive to me. But the fact is that it took non-utopians to bail out those sorry-ass utopians who got themselves in such a mess that they were on the verge of making themselves extinct because of their own actions.
And history is doomed to repeat itself, as we're starting to find out now. Paul, we're well into overdrive. We are well into overdrive, my friend. I appreciate the phone call. I really do. Thank you so much. You know, folks, I really just got to say this, and I'm glad Paul brought a lot of things to the table. You know, it is interesting. We do have the right in this country to make changes if we're not satisfied with the direction we're going in. The problem is very few people take the time or the initiative to enforce their right. I mean, that's the truth of it. Let's look at the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman situation, if you will. Who is benefiting from all this division between us? You notice that all the scandals of the Obama administration have completely disappeared. We're not really spending a lot of time talking about the criminal Eric Holder. We're fictitiously lying about white-on-black crime. We're making the black man think the white man is his problem. We're making the white man think that the black man is a criminal, and that's our problem. There's no other way to describe it. Last year, in 2011, I'll give you some numbers here. In 2011, according to the FBI.gov website, this is our FBI. This is information anybody can find. If you're online listening to this show right now, you can find it. Go to FBI.gov and look at crime in the U.S. But the last full rate I've got is 2011 homicide rates. In 2011, there were 448 white people killed by black criminals, murdered. In the same time period, there were 193 black people killed by white criminals, murdered. Now, by any stretch of the imagination, the numbers clearly show that whites killed by black are at least 2.5 times larger than blacks killed by whites. But you don't see the whites killed by blacks on the news because it doesn't fit the preconceived or the agenda that these communists or liberals want. It's that simple. There's no doubt about that. We have disturbing evidence coming in. You can go to thegatewaypundit.com, you know, but the FBI statistics show that violent attacks on whites have increased by 18%, not just for Trayvon Martin. No, this is prior to Trayvon Martin killing. This is 2010 to 2011. Violent crimes against blacks only increased 2%. Media is not telling you that. They're not telling you any of this. Rape and murder against whites by black people increased by 13%. The same black people but from white people, 4%. Here's a startling number for you. Crimes that were directly targeted at men jumped by 27%. So white men have been attacked at an astoundingly alarming number from 2010 to 2011. The two age groups, we talked a second ago with Paul, and we mentioned the word respect. The two age groups with the highest increases were the elderly. Their victimization rates increased by 48% in the 18 to 24-year-old group. The 18 to 24-year-old group rates went up by about 45%. The total victimization rate for the elderly went up 91%. Then you've got local teens all across this country bragging about the knockout game. One teen in St. Louis was bragging about how he had knocked out over 300 people in a knockout game. The knockout game is where a black guy walks up to a white guy that he doesn't know, just walks up and knocks him out. Just hits him, unprovoked, anything. Bam, he's gone. He's done. This is crazy. This is crazy. This is what they don't want you to know. And that is the biggest problem of all. Because it allows the daggone black community to falsely believe that every white man is a racist and it's a white man's fault that they're not getting ahead. It allows the white community to believe that the black man is nothing but criminal and murderers and they're the reason that we have all the problems in this world. And neither of which is true. There are good people on both sides of the coin. Want a good example? I'll give you one. 34-year-old man was attacked by a black mob. Yep, you guessed it. 34-year-old man was attacked by a black mob. He was a white male. After the Trayvon verdict came out, he had a bunch of black guys kick him, knock him down on the ground, start beating him to death. screaming that they did it because of Trayvon. They did it for Trayvon. Now, what message does that send? You just reinforce the garbage that the white racists want to hear. But had a dozen black teens beating the hell out of him, and there was a good Samaritan that jumped in and stopped it. He was getting beat from every direction in the world. All he was doing was walking to a bus stop Sunday evening in Milwaukee. And these dozen black kids decided to attack him because he was white. He says he blacked out for a minute or two. The good Samaritan who came in and saved him and made these guys run away, he was a black guy. He was a black guy. So a white man's getting beat up by a bunch of teenagers. A dozen teenagers attack a 34-year-old white guy, and a black good Samaritan jumps in to stop it. I'd love to give you his name, but we don't have it. Now, assumedly, based on all the garbage that the mainstream media and everybody else wants us to believe, black guy would never jump into a situation like that and save a white guy or vice versa. We know that's not the truth. We know that's not the truth. And that's the problem. We have another guy, Pat Mahoney. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. Pat Mahoney is 46 years old. He died yesterday at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. He was attacked a year ago, or actually last August. It's almost a year. He was attacked and beat up and put in the hospital a year ago by six black teenagers, 13 and 14 years old, folks. Not 17, not Trayvon. These are 13 or 14 years old. They beat the hell out of him. He finally died from his injuries in the hospital almost a year later. 46-year-old white guy beat to death by six black teens, 13 or 14 years old. Where was this on the mainstream news? Where was this on the mainstream news? This happens every day in America. It's not a one-sided game. It's time for black and white to come together, quit this blame game, and start working to stop teaching our kids this asinine garbage. And if you want another reality, I'll tell you. We have proof that racism is not what's being portrayed to be. Why do you think Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson disappeared for so long? They look for things like this so they can make themselves relevant again. Last night we talked about Gallup polling. You can listen to the story from last night. I'm not going to put you through that again. But the Gallup polling showed clear evidence that it's not as existent as mainstream wants us to do. So they've been bored for a while. Now they want to pursue their own agenda again. Get educated, get informed, and for God's sake, quit arguing about something that you don't know the first damn thing about and making up facts as you go along. You want to end racism in America? Then stand up in your own neighborhood and take responsibility for what's going wrong. Change your leadership so you can change your potential. It doesn't happen overnight, but it has to start somewhere. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Rob Chapman will be here filling in for Dale once again. And I guess he'll get into some Louisville issues. He might even talk more about the Rich Pearson and LMPD thing. I don't know. And don't forget our good friend Sunday night, Ken Mullen with Liberty Unbridled. Right here, same time, same channel. All shows are 7 o'clock. In the meantime, folks, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great night.